good morning or good afternoon, wherever you may be. My name is Andrew Sardone, and welcome to Auto Nerd. All right, so today we have a very interesting topic, and one that I'm actually very excited to share with you. And the reason is that this topic is not widely talked about. And when I go ahead and have our history week, and just so everybody is clear, I'm going to cover four basic topics throughout a month. You're going to receive topics pertaining to technology, electric vehicles. Yes, there is a difference. And then also customer experience, meaning that some sales skills type stuff. And then also history. Now, the reason that I incorporate history into all of this is that in order to be well-rounded at what we do, we have to understand what the past looked like because it will always dictate the future. And by knowing this, we can go ahead and take a look at the topic of Henry Ford and ethanol. And we can relate a lot of this directly to electric vehicle and how people are accepting the electric vehicle today. Now, I'm not going to go ahead and make this all about EV, but I will interject along the lines some of the behaviors that we have to go ahead and work with and acknowledge pretty openly that happened during Ford's era and then is also happening during current day. So I hope you really enjoy this one. This is one that I put a lot of work into, and we really dove pretty deep into the rabbit hole. Not too deep to the point where we start labeling all of Ford's family or anything like that or anything top secret. I didn't go that far in this. But we're going to essentially dive into why exactly Henry Ford came up with the idea of running vehicles on ethanol. So sit tight. This is a pretty interesting one. And if you're a history person of any kind, I'm sure you're going to enjoy this because I hit on a lot of different areas. So here we go. So Henry Ford had some pretty interesting ideas. Obviously, the assembly line is the biggest thing that he's noted with, and every automotive brand and manufacturing house around the world is taking note of that. But when we take a look at his environmental advocacy, this is something that many people have no idea that he even dabbled in. Actually, one of the things about Henry Ford that we all should know is that a lot of his environmental advocacy practices didn't even exist before he went ahead and did a lot of philanthropy to create these things. And so I'll get to a few of those as we go along here. But one of the fascinations that he had was going ahead and liberating us from fossil fuels. Now, which sounds pretty interesting, but you know, when he was designing and engineering his first engines, specifically when he started working with Model T, right? So Model T had a lot of modifications made to it to allow things like ethanol usage, and I'll get into that in just a moment. But he had this mild obsession with getting off of fossil fuel. Now, obviously, in the end, fossil fuel did win the day because there was a lot more money backing that than ethanol. But he did realize that there was a massive problem with fossil fuel. And the two really big things that stood out to him was, first off, we can't breathe this stuff, right? And so there's a lot of people out there that will beg to differ. But hey, you know what? Nobody has went ahead and paid me $5 to go ahead and put their mouth on my exhaust pipe, right? Which tells me that obviously we have some deep-rooted issue with pollution. So obviously everybody has a concern in some way or another, but when we take a look at how Ford wanted to go about liberating us from fossil fuels, we start to realize that it wasn't just the idea of going ahead and making a car that had the ability to run on pretty much, we'll call it what it is, alcohol. And so when this all happened, and just to give you a little bit of a rundown, we're going to start off in 1906, right? So in 1906, Henry Ford begins experimenting with alternative fuels, primarily ethanol, for his automobiles. Now, this made it so he could go ahead, retail his vehicle, and have people easily be able to fuel it. Okay, let's back up here a second. So if Henry Ford said, hey, you know what, I want to be able to allow people to easily access my fuel and be able to power their vehicles so they could drive it, sounds an awful lot like what we're dealing with today with EV. And again, I'll cycle back to that, but I don't want to get too high on the EV box today. But when we go ahead and take a look at what Ford realized in the early 20th century, he recognized the potential of this fuel basically because of its renewable nature, right? Ethanol, I mean, he selected basically a corn-based high starch fuel that through fermentation, we could go ahead and make a fuel that could continually be grown. Now, present day, we do know that there are a lot of vehicles out there that are flex fuel capable. Well, fun fact, he actually named the Model T that would run on the alcohol-based ethanol, the gasoline, and then also a combination of both the flex fuel Model T. There. Need to learn something today. There's your point, right? I had no idea that it was named the Flex Fuel Model T. When I saw it this past week in researching, I was like, no way. And then all of a sudden, Flex Fuel becomes a name onto that particular type of fuel, E85. But Henry Ford believed that this type of fuel, ethanol, could be democratized and empower individuals and communities to control their own fuel sources. Now, this is pretty awesome because this straight up means that if you have, let's say, like a little co-op in town that's around a bunch of farms, and you typically, let's say, fuel up there because it costs significantly less usually than going to your normal gas station, they would then go ahead and have basically straight up high-proof grain alcohol right there to pour into your fuel system that would be locally harvested, locally grown, locally distilled. So with this forward-thinking approach to sustainability and energy independence, Ford's efforts to produce ethanol never really fully came to fruition, right? And so one of his big things was is the concern that when he was to go ahead and retail his vehicles, where are these people going to fill up? Because at the time, there weren't fueling stations all over the place. And if many of you know, during the time of Ford's beginnings, we kind of went through a couple major wars. So there was a lot that held Ford back with this. But when World War II began, this brought significant disruptions to the supply chain, right? Things like rationing fuel, the logistical challenges, and also the Great Depression did not help at all. But this is one of those areas where Ford kind of stepped up to the plate. And he said, you know what, if we could get this fuel to be mainstream, well, there wouldn't be as much of a fuel shortage. Would there be some scarcity? I'm sure there would be. Depressions, we just went through one, are not fun at all for anybody along the supply chain. But because of things like the war effort and the governments around the world just gobbling up any form of oil that they can possibly get their hands on, this type of fuel was looked at as something that could be used for the masses, right? So pull everybody off of gasoline, get them on a fuel that is far more sustainable, that is better for the environment, that could also work as a locally harvested economic resource. Let me repeat that. That basically means that we're not going to go ahead and pay a large major corporation. Now, I personally don't have anything against oil companies, right? But when we go ahead and take a look at what the average person feels, this would play right into the average person saying, well, you know, now I don't need to pay big oil and pay $4 a gallon. I have no idea what the price would be. Obviously, right now, if you go to buy E85, its efficiency is far lower than gasoline in most circumstances, and it costs about the same. Which, if we started off with ethanol-based engines in the beginning, that definitely would not be the case. But he saw a future where the economy could naturally improve, especially local economies, because of this type of fuel that he was going to develop and contribute to all of us. But it wasn't easy. You see, when the war happened, primarily or specifically World War II happened, like I said just a second ago, is that the government started gobbling up fuel. Well, what Ford did is he essentially mashed the accelerator on ethanol to try to get it beyond what the federal government would actually be needing. Now, meaning that he really wanted this fuel to come out to the masses because it would have worked. Now, for any of you that that might be out there going, well, Andy's covering ethanol today, and you're kind of rolling your eyes, there's something I want you to understand is that ethanol is a burnable fuel. It is effective at what it does, but our engines today are not engineered to run efficiently on this stuff. Now, will it go ahead and if we run straight ethanol through a modern day gas engine, will it go ahead and run? I'm sure it's for a couple seconds. But as far as how it combusts, it's very different in its catalyst. So when it comes to modern day, if you fill your car up with this stuff, it's gonna wreak havoc on a lot of your vehicle gaskets and rubber and so when you look at it from that perspective, modern day vehicle is just not going to play out well. And with our infrastructure, we're built as an economy to run on gas and electric. We're not an economy to introduce a third or fourth type of fuel. Now, I know I'm excluding diesel for this point. We'll just lump that in with gasoline or fossil fuel for the time being. But this is fascinating because he got together with a lot of researchers out there, made a lot of changes to his vehicles simply to go ahead and allow this fuel to come to the forefront. Present day, we currently have, obviously, as I said, vehicles that do run on ethanol. And the people that end up buying those, if you talk to them, usually they will not go ahead and say, I bought this because of its fuel savings, because that's not what it does, right? We have a lot of people that do walk this earth every single day that actually do genuinely care about the environment, but at the same time, they do want their big SUV, right? So this is a great way of having your cake and eating it too, so to speak. But he really did pave the way for the advancements for ethanol technology to start to build up around here. Now, eventually ethanol became that fuel source, and it's currently being incorporated in larger quantities, it seems like, as the years go on, in regular gasoline. But don't worry, when it comes down to integrating it into your current fuel, manufacturers are tweaking the software constantly on their computers to adapt for this, and future vehicles actually will have the ability to have the manufacturer adjust the computer remotely to be able to accommodate for these fuels far better than current modern day vehicles. So as many of us know, any developer of any company has ideas that just come out of the woodwork. And I heard one person say, and I wish I could remember what their name was, they were being interviewed about how to operate their company. And they said that as a CEO, my primary job is to break the company. And I kind of laughed at about that because I understand exactly what they mean is that they come up with ideas left, right, and sideways. And we heard about this with Steve Jobs. And if you ever have a chance to read his memoir, it dives pretty deep down into the life of Jobs and how exactly he interacted with everybody around them. And even Tim Cook said after Jobs' passing is that he'd get calls in the middle of the night with new, different ideas, right? And a lot of that was with the full intention of seeing how far the company can be pushed. Now, with that, the Model T was a vehicle that obviously Ford wanted to retail at incredibly high volume. But in the United States, we had in 1906, 485 different companies trying to break into the U.S., and the vast majority of them offered up a vehicle. You see, in the infancy of the automotive industry in the United States, at least early 1900s, all you had to do was apply and you get a license for manufacture. Not a problem at all. But if you were already established, you tried to create some sort of semblance of sanity and make your vehicles highly understandable. So what Ford was trying to do with the Model T was to make it a vehicle that everybody could use, everybody could understand, everybody could go ahead and wheel it into their home and have a true flexible fuel vehicle. He and his team set out to manufacture this vehicle to be able to run on anything. And because they noticed on the door of when you would go ahead and buy a vehicle, right, the car dealership door, they realized pretty quickly that there's not enough gasoline all over the place. The network just is not built yet. So he set forth to go ahead and put investment in to get more ethanol filling stations and more gas stations out there, but the war was just holding it back, right? Because everybody wanted gasoline. It was just being stitched into everybody's heads that what you need is a gasoline-powered car. And even today, with EVs, so let's circle back real quick and just put some understanding on this. Most people are hesitant to get into electric vehicles because we're so deeply ingrained with gas. Now, is there much of a point of moving forward in the future with gasoline? Honestly, no, there's not. We have an infrastructure for electric in the United States that is so incredibly strong, yet people dog it all the time and say, well, you know, we are not ready for it around here.
Well, you know, when Ford looked at the Model T and he looked at the unsustainableness of fossil fuel, which he was realizing in the beginning of the automobile, he realized pretty fast that we need another solution. And we need a solution that can be instantly renewed. Now, EV brings this back to the forefront, other than now, instead of one individual like Henry Ford, you have all automotive manufacturers creating a united front to push forward, because the next generation of automobile is electric. Keep in mind that we've changed everything in our lives to electric, other than our car. I mean, heck, we've even figured out how to put a motor in a toothbrush. So back to Ford real quick and his drive to get ethanol out there. His commitment to innovation and experimentation really did lay the foundation for environmental consciousness in the automotive industry, right? It made sure that everybody, right? When we take a look over at Dodge, when we take a look over at Chevrolet, everybody started to take a look and go, hey, listen, we've made our car run. How can we make it go further? How can we make it go faster? How can we make it go faster but still use less fuel to get you from point A to point B? So by collaborating with agricultural experts that are out there, Ford realized that his dream would eventually take. It made a lot of sense, right? So with this, he worked with the Michigan State University, Iowa State University, and researchers and specialists tried to, as hard as they could, to get some sort of license to be able to produce this fuel at a very high rate. It just made so much sense, right? Because you would be investing in farmers, crop cultivations would happen, they'd sell their fuel, it would be turned into biofuel production, and stations would have to be produced. And on top of that, agricultural economics would explode, because now we are buying fuel from farms that the farmer will then have a reliable income next year to produce more fuel, right? So Ford's environmental stewardship was absolutely incredible at the time, and what he was thinking about and how to make sure that we were successful in the future, not just 5 years, not 10 years, but hundreds of years into the future, really gave us that springboard to understand that there's other systems out there, and there's better systems other than ethanol.
So Ford laid the groundwork to allow us to acknowledge that maybe there are other things out there that will give us the capability to advance ourselves into the future quite substantially. But let's rewind a little, all right? When we look at what Ford was doing and the mindset of Henry at the time, we find that the timeline looks a little bit like this. In 1906, right, Ford starts experimenting with ethanol for automobiles. And so, as I said before, he saw the writing on the window that when it comes down to fossil fuel, this is not a sustainable thing, right? In my personal opinion, we have gone on this for a little over 100 years, and we're lucky that we've gotten to this point. Now, 1925 rolls around. Ford's research on ethanol leads to development of the Flex Fuel Model T. Now, this vehicle wasn't just set up to run on straight up alcohol. Actually, it ran on ethanol, it ran on gasoline, and also blends of both. So how exactly Ford did that, as far as having what was switchable item in the car allowed it to do that, I'm not too entirely sure, and I had a lot of issues finding exactly that. But here's the thing. The guy was already looking into this stuff. He already recognized the problems, and on top of that, he took his environmental stewardship to a whole nother level that many of us wish that the billion of the world would at least aspire to, right? Because with this, he took it upon himself to invest in a lot of philanthropy that led down the path of things like forest restoration projects, where he provided financial support to organizations engaged in planting things like in planting trees, restoring forest efforts to offset things like carbon emissions. I mean, this is what the guy was thinking at the time, right? And we're talking about this daily. Conservation education programs he was sponsoring, to build up education initiatives aimed at raising awareness about environmental issues and promoting conservation.
among the public, partially in local communities near Ford's facilities. And then also, when it comes to agricultural research, he dove down the rabbit hole with two universities and the U.S. Department of Agriculture in an attempt to make ethanol mainstream and far more relevant. Obviously, you know, as we mentioned, that didn't entirely take, but it had its place. It planted the seed. And then he created grants for environmental organizations, providing awards to environmental organizations dedicated to conservation, sustainability, and protecting natural resources. And then with the environmental advocacy, he uses influence and resources to advocate for policies and practices that promote environmental stewardship and address pressing environmental challenges. So with this, even from the infancy, in the beginning, when it comes to fuel efficiency, when it comes to the method of powering the vehicles, this gentleman, way back in the day, that we credit so much of our industry to, was trying to right the ship before the ship was even built and still ran into a lot of problems along the way. So now back to this whole timetable. 1937, Ford continues to promote ethanol as a renewable fuel and advocates its widespread adoption. And then 1941 comes around, and Ford took a slightly different path, right? Ford partnered up with George Washington Carver to explore alternative uses for things like agricultural crops, including, again, ethanol production, because that was a renewable resource. Every year, the corn is knee-high by the 4th of July, as the saying goes, right? 1970s hit. Obviously, you know, Ford, you know, met his demise, but, you know, rest his soul. But Ford Motor Company carried on his messaging. And so the Ford Motor Company participated in the U.S. Department of Energy's ethanol research program, exploring ethanol and the potential alternative fuels that could also be used in conjunction with our current gasoline. Now, 2000s hit. Ford introduces their flex fuel vehicle, right? Now, multiple vehicles came out, and they were capable of running on ethanol blends up to 85%. Now, with those vehicles, as a lot of you know, many of us tended to look at them and go, oh, man, why would I want to do that? Keep in mind, if you looked at the vehicle and you're like, man, I don't want that. Why would anybody want to drive an ethanol-built vehicle? Some vehicles out there are built for people that actually do genuinely care about the environment. Now, not to say that you don't care about the environment, but if you're driving this vehicle and you're rolling coal going down the interstate simply because I'm talking about the environment the whole time, that vehicle was not built for you. It's that easy. When it does come to 2006, Ford celebrates its 100th anniversary of its first ethanol-powered vehicle, right, with the introduction of the Ford Flex Fuel vehicle lineup, right? Present day, Ford continues to invest in ethanol research and development, exploring advanced biofuel technologies and sustainable ethanol production methods. The deal is, and the reason that I wanted to go on this path, is that many of us, when we look at the world of just automotive in general, we tend to put up these defensive walls for what reason I cannot figure out, right? Now, we're building this back around to EV for a quick second here. You see, the whole industry is looking at electric vehicles as what will take us into the future. Now, we can be those people that dig our heels in, and that's fine. We're not going to go ahead and convert the whole industry over to electric overnight. That simply just can't happen. There's not enough mining operations to go ahead and put a massive lithium battery in everybody's driveway, right? That just can't happen right now. But here's something that will happen, and I know that Ford would very much appreciate this comment, is that there will become a point, right? We'll call this an apex, when mining operations for things like lithium and nickel will start to take a very dramatic dive, right? Because with this, we can't take these batteries and just unload them and throw them in the ocean or, you know, let them decay and, you know, things like that. They'd be terrible on the environment. So recycling is going to be, and it's already starting to ramp up in a big way, but recycling is going to be paramount to the success of the automotive industry moving forward with EV. But we can't have that resistance that somebody that is riding their horse and buggy, and I kid you not, there are books written on this topic, and I laugh every single time that I see it, because human behavior does not really ever change. And so with that, as I said in the beginning, one third of the vehicles on the road were electric, and one third of the vehicles on the road were some sort of fossil fuel, and one third on the road were horse and buggy. The people that had horse and buggy that loved their horses, and who wouldn't, genuinely would go ahead and say, absolutely not. Why would I want to drive that mechanical thing? It's going to explode. It's going to set on fire. I'm going to park it in my barn. Next thing you know, all the hay is going to explode and my horses are going to die. Now we relate it to present day. I don't want to drive that electric vehicle because I'm going to plug it into my house. The grid is going to black out because I have no idea how the grid actually works. In addition to that, it's instantly going to go ahead and spontaneously combust. And my whole house is going to burn to the ground and everybody's going to die. This behavior, I'm so tempted to say it's got to stop, but it does provide a lot of great humor with this. But as time progresses, this comfort level with alternatively powered vehicles eventually diminishes. And the moral to this story and the reason why I really took a close look at Henry Ford and ethanol is, number one, I think it's a really cool story. Number two, we can take this and look at our customers daily and apply some facts. If you notice that customer that you're working with, it should absolutely be in an electric vehicle because they spend so much running around town all the time. We need to take a step back and go, well, I understand you want to buy a gas car. If they're looking to buy a gas car right then and now, I'm going to sell them a gas car. Hands down, that's the way to go. But if the customer's willing to hear you out, explain to them that when it comes down to it, history dictates that whenever something is new, it's scary. We're human. That's how it is. We're always scared of new things because there's this factor called the unknown. And once the unknown is then known, then it's not an issue. But there is a reason why the United States is the only first world country that is having struggles adopting electric vehicles. I mean, seriously, one country in the whole world, first world, that can't go ahead and wrap their brain around electrics. This is how politicized this issue is, and not for nothing, I think it's probably the dumbest thing to criticize a vehicle based on the fact that, oh man, I don't want to go ahead and drive that. Well, why? Well, it's not gasoline. Listen, I'm not wealthy enough, and neither are the vast majority of the people in this country to go ahead and warrant $4 per 35 miles. It just doesn't make sense when I could go ahead and be rolling around for substantially less, right? $30, $40, $50, $1 per 35 miles. And that's on electric. That's basically the very rough conversion. But when we look at ethanol, if ethanol stuck around and we had vehicles that ran on it, we probably would have some sort of other, environmental issue as far as emissions goes. But when it comes to the renewable side of it, we would see fuel prices take a very staggering drop. I don't know if any of you remember when E85 came out, they tried very hard to suppress the price on that and just crush it and get everybody to flop on over. Well, eventually it became more expensive than gasoline because nobody wanted to buy the cars because they didn't, again, understand them. So just note that as time progresses, we need to be open-minded about new tech. Because these people that are engineering these things, these people that are designing these things, these people that are shopping for these things, understand that if they can get into something new, they will be filling that void within inside of them that either says, hey, you got to be better with the planet, do your part. Or you want something faster, buy an EV. Or you want something that is just going to be different. Now, here's the thing. I built this podcast primarily for sales consultants, managers, and owners to listen to. And I know many people that are outside of the industry do listen to it, and that's awesome. Great. I appreciate that. Please hit subscribe. All of you, please hit subscribe. It does help me out. Now, when we go ahead and we look at this, if we as sales consultants, as owners, as managers, want to be resistant to new technologies coming out, and we don't want to promote those vehicles, here's what I have to say in the kindest way possible. Get out of the way because you will fail. That's just the black and white of it. When it comes to managers, and I see this happen occasionally when I talk to people, is that they will tell me up, down, and sideways that, well, there's no business. We have no business of getting into electrics. And it doesn't matter what brand I talk to. Everybody says this. The thing is that as the clock ticks, progression must happen, right? Now, I'm not talking about political correction or anything like that. What I am talking about is that progression must happen to move society forward in a way that makes us more technologically advanced. You know, we have people that are out there right now running around screaming their heads off about AI is going to go ahead and crush everything, and it very well may, right? But if we aren't willing to participate in the world of technology, if we aren't willing to participate and learn about the technology, if we aren't willing to go ahead and make the ability for us and clear out the mental bandwidth that gives us the ability to accept fact, to accept the science. It was once said by, and I got to look up this philosopher's name, or not philosopher, he's a physicist, but he once said on one of his podcasts, and I love this, and I say it all the time, the fun thing about science is that it's irrefutable. You don't have the ability to have an opinion. And when we do the math, and I did the math not too long ago, just based on averages, I had somebody one day go ahead and say, well, you know, Andy, they're never going to, EVs will never catch on because of, you know, carbon footprint. Okay, cool. So let's say ethanol did, right? So if ethanol caught on, what would be the price difference between car and car? Probably close to nothing. If anything, people would go for the ethanol right off the bat simply because it would be readily available and is a less expensive fuel and it's renewable, yada, 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 save the environment. But when it comes to electric, when somebody mentioned this to me, they would not get off the soapbox. Right, I mentioned to them, hey, recycling is going to go ahead and help out with that. Carbon footprint is going to be reduced. Everybody's changing their bulbs to LEDs in their homes, which makes a far greater impact than what most people see. Our televisions are not these big old, cathode ray monitors anymore. Our computers are not these big, awesomely huge things that sit on our desk anymore. We are using a lot less power than we used to. So when somebody plugs a car into the home, the carbon footprint of that vehicle is not expanding at the rate that a gas car would, right? The very rough math, if an EV was powered off a nuclear power plant its whole life, okay? So it's not powered off coal, right? Right now, and I forgot the statistics, it's something like 215 coal plants in the United States and then like something like 25 nuclear or something like that. But I'll look that up for another podcast. So don't quote me on that and beat me up on it in the comments. But when we look at this, an EV will surpass the carbon footprint, or break even rather, on its carbon footprint within the 16th tank. Okay, so within the 16th tank, it just broke even with a gas car. And now the gas car, for every tank that it puts in there, its carbon footprint expands and expands and expands and expands. And so that was just done on averages. I'll do a podcast and break down the math on that. But for every gallon that you put in, the carbon footprint gets larger. With the EV, if it's not powered off of a carbon-based device, that then drops, right? So as far as this goes, we need to be open to new technologies. We need to be open for them, even when they're different, right? So in 1906, if this was accepted and people were going, oh, wait, hold on. So the farmer down the street from me, and I'm out in, let's say, the middle of, I don't know, the middle of Utah, let's say, and I'm hearing Ford's bulletin here, over whatever wire I might receive that on, and I'm hearing that Ford is developing a fuel that runs on ethanol that's widely acceptable to everybody out there. If I got a buddy that's a farmer down the street, I'm gonna walk right on over to him and go, hey, bro, you need to go ahead and start making me some fuel. Well, why? Because the co-op over here in the gas station, it's really expensive. So I need you to make me fuel and make everybody else fuel. And you know what? We're going to make you a billionaire right now. And you're going to help me, one of these 400 and some odd car manufacturers in 1906. You're going to help me be successful because I'm going to jump on this with Ford because we're going to go ahead and have a local car company be hugely successful simply based on the fact that we manufacture our own easily to accessible fuel right here in our hometown. Right? So again, cycling on back, we really have no justification to make any sort of stance when we have a customer come in that's simply looking to go ahead and buy a vehicle based on what their lifestyle dictates. So we'll circle back around here real quick. If you are one of those people that feel the need to not sell the electric car simply based on the fact that it's electric and you don't want to sell it, give the customer somebody else, please. Right? Don't be that individual. Don't be that guy. Don't be that girl that's like, I'm going to change the whole industry and carry this flag of gasoline. Why? Why? Are you that wealthy that you can go down the street and put $60 into your tank 3 times a week while you're running your kids all around the place, making $180, nearly $800 a month in fuel? I mean, heck, if you're a car salesperson and all you're running outdoor minis all day long, that's 8 extra units you got to run. I mean, you do the math on it. We are going ahead and draining our bank accounts simply to go ahead and do what? Be happy for... have the warm and fuzzies while we're driving on the road. I honestly don't get it. The problem is actually I do get it, but I get it to a point where I don't understand why people will dig their heels in. I mean, what is it? You open up the newspaper and, you know, somebody's saying that I'll kill EVs as soon as, come on. No, you're not. The cloth has been cut. The cars are being produced. The factories are being built. You can't change the industry. It's the way that it's going. So let me get off my EV soapbox here real quick. So Ford goes ahead and does all of this absolutely incredible stuff, right? The guy's into environmental conservation. The guy's into sponsoring educational programs and initiatives, right? He's providing public assistance in certain areas to help fund these projects. He's getting together with farmers and colleges to help make this fuel a reality. And then eventually, and I know it took like 100 years, but Ford finally came around to it, right? And once they finally came around to it, the public just wasn't there. It doesn't mean that fuels like this won't work in the future, right? So, you know, I've said it for a long time, and I'll continue to say it, and I don't think it'll ever happen in my lifetime, or maybe it will, who knows. But, you know, the next step after electric is bringing the internal combustion engine back. And so if you haven't seen the writing on the wall in this, one of the things that needs to happen in order for Henry's vision to really play out well here is that electric vehicles have to have success. And if electric vehicles have success, this makes way for a whole nother industry to start gobbling up a lot of those gas stations. And then now we have the ability to introduce hydrogen. Now, I know a few of you just rolled your eyes, and I'm rolling my eyes just kind of saying it. But the thing is that makes sense. Is that right now we don't have an infrastructure to provide Ford's dream. We don't have an infrastructure to go ahead and say, hey, you know what? The Hyundai N74 concept, which looks like a totally awesome kick butt DeLorean, is going to be hugely successful in every single city in the country. We can't do that, right? We can't look at Honda and be like, hey, dude, I want that Honda Civic hydrogen where I live. Can't, because there's nowhere to fill it up. But eventually there will be. Something has to happen to those gas stations, and they're not all going to turn into little convenience stores on every single curb. So with this, take your hat off of, hey, you know what? I'm going to sit on that stump, carry the flag of anti-EV. I tell you this, you're going against your own grain. You're shooting yourself in the foot, and not for nothing, you might as well just lop it off at the knee. Because the success rate of somebody that is going to be anti is going to have a closing ratio far lower than anybody else that is on the showroom floor, right? Keep in mind that positivity spreads, and with positivity, people will go ahead and invest in people far heavier with much more capital, and also eliminate competition, even if that competition is more budget-friendly, if they're in an environment that is more inviting, that gives them a permission to say yes, right? So as far as that goes, that is the cool story that I dug up out of the ages. I'm going to have a lot of these going on forward, but when it does come down to things like, Henry Ford's ability, I hope you guys enjoyed this story. His production efforts and his capabilities, it just really opened up a lot of my eyes, or both of my eyes, rather, to see that, hey, you know what? These things were happening. And we need to support them, right? And so when you do hear somebody that, well, we're developing this solar power vehicle, even myself, I know solar power vehicles are an absolute joke, not joke as in they'll never come to fruition, but solar just doesn't have the capability to be a reliable thing for everybody every single day if it is only mounted on the vehicle. You need to have a much larger solar panel. But even when you see those things, look at them. Don't make fun of them. Look at them and try to understand them. And what you're going to see is a whole group of people that looks at the automobile in a very different light, that's going to be really accepting to the fact that, hey, you know what? Yeah, Ford did try ethanol. It didn't work, but it doesn't mean that his message didn't have value. And it doesn't mean that it doesn't transcend today. Because when you're sitting down with that customer and they're saying, hey, I'm looking for this for X, Y, or Z. We can almost go back to what Ford was saying, and hey, are you concerned about the environment anyway? Oh, yeah. Or you'll have people that are like, no, I really just don't care. I just want a vehicle that that gets like, you know, 50 miles to the gallon, whatever, dude. So when it comes down to this, efficiency is efficiency, however anybody wants to earn it. But we do need to still sell cars. We need to get people on in them, which means that we need to be empathetic to their needs and be able to put ourselves in their shoes. Right? If everybody did it when Ford was around, we would be running on ethanol. Since they weren't, we're now obviously running on gasoline. And someday I'll go ahead and do a podcast on how exactly the auto cycle engine came to be, but also how it was all the competitors out there, won the day. But when we go ahead and do this, we have to understand that we are there to sell the car. And by selling the car, it means to make people happy. So I hope you enjoyed this podcast. I'll have way more coming on out. When it comes to history, I'm going to dive down the rabbit hole next month on a topic that I think you guys are going to find pretty entertaining. But this one I really wanted to get out there right off the bat. Just because it was just top of mind. It's something that I think about an awful lot. It's just the fact that, you know, innovation comes out of some very interesting places. And sometimes that innovation is just way too ahead of its time for us to really, truly appreciate. And so thank you, Henry Ford, for doing what you're doing. If you do work at Ford, go ahead, give yourself a self-high five. Note that the beginnings of your automotive manufacturing capabilities over there really did have a very unique and interesting start. It's not just all about the assembly line. Environmentalism did play a very critical role in how he went ahead and built pretty much everything there, including recycling systems at his facility. Facilities, which at the time nobody was really looking into. It was just like, hey, we got a bunch of metal here. What do you want to do with it? Give it to the bike shop down the street. Not the case with this, right? He was using a very specific steel, the manufacturer's car, and that alone as well also determined the fuel that was being used, because with that he would need to bring in copper and all sorts of ceramics and things like that that didn't really exist in the way that they do today back then if he wanted to do electric, which he definitely didn't want to do. But fun fact, Ford's wife, Carla Ford, actually did drive an electric vehicle. And from what I can find, she really actually kind of enjoyed it. So he didn't express any, Ford himself or Henry himself didn't really put down anything worth noting and express any interest in electric for his cars. But his wife did drive a competitive vehicle from Detroit Electric for many years. And so this particular vehicle was produced by the Anderson Electric Company, which was a direct competitor to Ford. Notice how it wasn't a motor company, because there were 400 something brands in the United States. So just kind of a fun fact there. It doesn't mean Ford wasn't thinking about it, but I imagine that when Carla, suggested that either they or she goes out and gets one of these things, that Ford did take quite a bit of time to look at that and go, who should I talk to about this? And I have no doubt that he was talking to an Edison or Tesla type at some point in time. And I mean, Nikola Tesla, not Elon's company, that he was talking to one of them at some point in time to find an alternative. Because the one fuel type that we can rely on that everybody has, even in times of crisis, and we can again talk about this later with generators and all that fun stuff, is electric. It's not gasoline. Gasoline runs out. I live here in Florida. It runs out all the time. During times of crisis. So with that, just get off your soapbox, anti-EV. There's no point, right? Spread the love, have some fun, right? Sell the cars. All right, gang. But that is all for today. Please go ahead, subscribe to the podcast, give it to a friend, send it to somebody else. And when it comes down to it, you can always go ahead if you have a suggestion or a comment. As of right now, there's no great commenting system for me because I'm waiting till we hit the 10th podcast, and then I'm going to open it up to Spotify and then also go ahead and crack open YouTube as well. But with this, please go ahead and, if you'd like, email me at andrew@autonerd.com. That's AUTOKNERD. And please subscribe to the podcast. And next week, we have another fun topic on deck for you. I'm not going to tell you what it is now, but I will be releasing that article on Tuesday. And so when it does come out, or if you want to head on over to my webpage right now, that's autonerd.com, sign up for the newsletter. I'll just drop those right into those new blog posts for Tuesday right into your email box. So if you want to know what's coming on up, just sign up for the newsletter, right? I'm not going to spam you. Don't worry about that. Everybody have a great, great kick butt sort of day. And I will talk to you guys a little bit later. This is Andrew Sardone of Auto Nerd signing off.